Welcome into a brand new episode of the Bengals Beat podcast presented by Free Store Food Bank. I'm your host, Kelsey Conway. We are live from the Cincinnati Inquirer studio here right across the street from the Bengals training camp facility where I'll be headed after here along with my photographer who is shooting this podcast right now. So be sure to check out Cincinnati.com a little bit later on for the coverage from today's training camp practice. But before we get to today's practice, let's take you back through the last week in Bengals news. We'll kick it off with some headlines here. And of course, we're going to start the headline period with an update on Joe Burrow. And that is that Zach Taylor said late last week that Burrow indeed did suffer a calf strain and he is going to be out for several weeks. What do you think several weeks is? That's a conversation that's been going around. Is several 2 to 3? Is several 4 to 5? We'll let you make that argument to yourself. But all we know is he said several. So it doesn't appear that we're going to be seeing Joe Burrow anytime soon. But a little bit of a positive note is that Joe Burrow was in the Bengals locker room yesterday after practice, moving around without a limp, in good spirits as he was talking to his offensive line, looked to be on the mend. Of course, with a soft tissue injury like a calf strain, you have to be very careful because the last thing the Bengals want and what Burrow would want is to rush back and then potentially make the strain worse. So we really will see. And at this point, I know that the Bengals and Burrow was very excited to have a full training camp, but I would expect them to be very, very cautious and err on the side of cautious instead of rushing him back because it hasn't really been a problem for the Bengals when their star quarterback has missed training camp over the last 2 years. So we will just keep an eye on that. But that is the latest on Burrow. He was hoping to be able to get a couple snaps in a preseason game, but it doesn't sound like that is likely. So at this point, it's just a matter of when he's able to come back. But there's also the contract part of this whole discussion. And that is Burrow going to come back when he's healthy without a contract extension in place? And that is something that only he and his agent and probably the Bengals front office know at this point. And there is a, I would say probably 80% of the population that is saying right now he shouldn't come back until he has signed that deal. And it's hard to argue against it because an injury can change a player's life. And I've always said personally, I have no problem with holdouts and players wanting to get their money because when you look at how physical the sport of football is, it is brutal. And especially at that position. And I was there at practice when he went down and you could have heard a pin drop. It was that quiet amongst the Bengals players and the media covering. And it just goes to show just how valuable he is because when he's not at practice, and of course, no disrespect to Jake Browning and Trevor Siemian, it's just a different level of play. And you go into this season right now, the Bengals have sky high expectations as a potential Super Bowl contender. And without him, that drastically changes. So if you're Burrow, you have all of the leverage in the world. And heaven forbid that injury to his calf strain was any worse and it was another ACL injury. He's 26 years old. Could you imagine being him and having two ACLs that he's had to recover from? That would drastically change his contract value. And of course, the Bengals would do right by their quarterback, but they also have a business to protect and things could drastically change if another significant injury happened to him. So of course, it would make sense for him to want to make sure he gets his guaranteed money up front. And, you know, you cannot fault him for wanting to do that and protecting himself. And then there's also, you know, a small portion of people that would say, you know, it's going to get done when it gets done and he's under contract for 2 more years. So he should come out and play. And you can hear both sides of things. I'm on the side personally of he shouldn't play again in practice until he gets that deal done. That's also because I think the Bengals, the clock is starting to tick for them a little bit on these contract extensions because Burrow's deal affects T. Higgins' potential deal. T. Higgins' deal potentially impacts Logan Wilson. It's a domino effect. And that's why I think the sooner that the Bengals get this Burrow deal done, everybody can exhale. You can start working out some of the other smaller deals that are also very important. So that is the update on Joe Burrow. We'll keep you posted as always, as that will be something to watch over the next couple of weeks. And another headline for the week so far is the Bengals had an off day on Sunday, and yesterday they resumed to practice. The pads go on today, but to start practice yesterday to kick off the week, defensive end Trey Hendrickson was not practicing. Zach Taylor said it's a lower leg issue, and he said he was going to be limited today and throughout the week potentially. So keep your eye on that. Trey Hendrickson, of course, just signed a 1-year extension to keep him in Cincinnati for the next 3 seasons. So we will be keeping an eye on that. And I wanted to start this podcast after headlines by taking you through what I wrote on Saturday, and that is the 5 biggest takeaways from the Bengals' first period of training camp. And I'll preface this by saying the pads were not on. It is hard to gauge things without the pads. So I typically defer from making any grandiose statements after the first week of training camp. But there were some notable things, and I'd like to share with you my 5 biggest takeaways from Bengals training camp to start. The Bengals Beat podcast is presented by Free Store Food Bank. So let's kick it off with number one, and that is obviously the Joe Burrow update that I just gave you. Number two, we have, for me on this list of importance, is that Chidobe Awuzie continues to still work his way back. Right before training camp started, he was cleared from the PUP list, which is the physically unable to perform list. And he has been out at practice every single day doing individual work and looking very well on the sides. When he's running, he looks strong. And as far as an update on him, I spoke to cornerbacks coach Chuck Burks after practice last week. He was in awe of the progress that Chido has made in terms of being able to be back by this training camp period. He tore his ACL in a gruesome injury on Halloween. And for this quick turnaround, it speaks to A, the work he's done to put himself in this position, but truly just how athletic and strong he is as an athlete. And a quote that really stood out to me was that when Burke said, to see him on the field, going through his technique, going through individual, he looks explosive. It's almost like he never skipped a beat. And to say that without pads or anything, I think is a really good reminder that Chido is capable of coming back and being the same player, if not better, after this injury. And, you know, he's on a second contract, getting close to 30 years old. You wonder how much an injury like this can impact a player's career. Well, it sounds like Chido is going to be good to go, and you can count on him to be your number one starting cornerback who's going to have a tough season in terms of he gets the best matchups every week going up against opponent's top wide receivers. And it sounds like he is going to be good to go. And Burke said you wouldn't even think he was coming off of an ACL. So we have not seen him participate in team drills, but we will see how that progresses. I'm sure based off the way Zach Taylor has done things in years past, as training camp goes on, they will ease him back onto the field. And I would imagine that towards the back end of this training camp period, they will get him involved in some of those team drills just so that he can A, get acclimated to it, and B, the communication between he and the rest of the secondary is sound as they get ready for their week one season opener against the Cleveland Browns. All right, number three for me has been the must-see matchup between Cam Taylor-Britt and Ja'Marr Chase. This one has had some fireworks to it, and it's honestly been something that I've been really excited to watch over the first couple of days of practice, because if you look at where Cam Taylor-Britt was at this point last season compared to where he is now, it is incredibly impressive. And what stands out about this matchup is with Chido not able to participate in the team periods of practice, it's Cam Taylor-Britt who mostly draws the bulk of getting to defend Ja'Marr Chase in practice. And Ja'Marr Chase, he said, is up. He's got his number right now. But Taylor-Britt has made a number of plays that show the improvement he's made. He's been right in his pocket. And it, Chase, of course, does some freak things that make you think, oh my gosh, I don't know how he did that, but that's just Ja'Marr Chase. But Taylor Britt has been able to win some of those battles. He's knocked down a couple passes. He's right in stride with Chase. Very rarely do you see him just get absolutely hosed down the sideline by Chase, but it's definitely been the matchup to see so far. And Taylor Britt looks like he's really coming along, and that's good for the Bengals, because with a healthy Cheeto and Cam Taylor Britt now having a year under his belt, that cornerback room for the Bengals looks a lot better than it did last year at this time. And behind those guys is what also has impressed me, and that is the play of rookie second round pick DJ Turner, who's gotten some time with the ones. They've been really working a lot of guys in. Sidney Jones, of course, is someone that has gotten time playing opposite of Taylor Britt. They're being calculated with that. Just this is the time that they can see who is best suited to plug in to those lineups when necessary. But DJ Turner has caught a lot of people's attention. He's made a number of plays on the ball. You can tell his speed and his explosiveness. So keep your eye on him as someone to watch in the preseason, because he is quickly climbing the depth charts. And I wouldn't be shocked if when the training camp season is over and they release their first depth chart, if it's not DJ Turner, who's not this team's number three cornerback. And in the NFL, you need three starting caliber cornerbacks, because it's just inevitable injuries happen and it's a long season. And as you saw last year with Cheeto going out, you just don't know what can happen. And to have three starting caliber cornerbacks is really important. And Turner looks like he is coming along to climb those depth charts there. So keep your eye on that rookie. And number five on my list is an update on the punter battle. Why am I talking about the punter battle so early on in camp? Well, that is because I'd like to start by sending best wishes to punter Drew Krishman as he works his way back on the field. He was in the hospital last week to start camp with an undisclosed injury that he was able to be released and is now back with the Bengals. He was at practice yesterday, not practicing, but it seems like he is on the mend, and we're wishing all the best for Drew. But this, of course, means that Brad Robbins, the Bengals rookie who is likely to take over as the starting punter, he doesn't have any competition at practice right now. And when I asked Zach Taylor how they're going to figure out who's going to win that competition with Drew sideline, he said, oh, Darren Simmons, the Bengals special teams coordinator, will find a way. There's a lot of things that you can do in practice to still see where a player is coming along. And he said Darren has decades worth of notes to compare it to and see where they need to be in punting situations and give Brad things to continue to work on and try differently. So we will see when Drew is able to get back on the field where things stand. But for right now, it's Brad Robbins' show as the Bengals punter. So those were just a couple takeaways from me through the first portion. Of course, as camp goes on, I will have more, but I thought those were the most notable things. And I also had, if I could add a sixth to it, it would have been what I wrote about last night, but I'm glad that this story got its own place because I think it's an important one. And that is the switch from left tackle to right tackle for Jonah Williams. So where is Jonah Williams at in his switch of positions? Well, I had a chance to speak with him and offensive line coach Frank Pollock yesterday, and I found the conversation to be very enlightening in that you look at these professional athletes, specifically NFL football players, and you hear, well, he's just switching sides. You know, how hard could that be? People might ask. And it's not a slight. It's just people are wondering what are the main differences between switching sides? And I had a conversation with Jonah that really opened my eyes to just the amount that needs to be taken into consideration when you're evaluating Jonah early on. And my story is up on Cincinnati.com if you want to check it out for further details. But for Jonah's specific switch, here's what Frank Pollock had to say about how he's going through his progression.
When you switch sides, your anchor leg, your power legs, your inside leg, so that's switching. Your dominant hand is your inside hand, so that's switching. So just getting comfortable from a pass protection standpoint, being able to redirect and anchor on bull rush, redirect on an inside move efficiently, not be awkward while at the same time you're able to use your hands. Mm-hmm. His hand strikes are backwards. He's used to using his outside hand and bringing his right hand underneath on the left side. Now he's flipping that on some of the hand strikes that we're incorporating and teaching. So those are just getting used to that. And every layer of pads come on. Now it's going to be more violent collisions, requiring him to sit and anchor, be more powerful and more natural. So the more reps he can get at doing that, you'll see us use bungees, sandbags, maybe even some med ball type things to help him kind of incorporate that without pads on. So now when the pads come on, we get more reps of actual having to load and stress a new power leg, a new inside power hand, all that good stuff. So those are the things you really want in the to get comfortable with and make it a seamless transition.
So a couple of things to keep in mind here. Jonah Williams wasn't given the offseason to really get his footwork down and put himself in a position where he could be in training camp going full force, ready to go. He was recovering from a knee injury that made him unavailable to do all those things. And you bring in the conversation of the trade talks and it was unfulfilled. There was a trade on the table and the Bengals opted not to trade him. But here's everything from his side, right? He doesn't know if he's actually going to have to play on the right side when he asked for his trade because he doesn't know if other teams are going to want him to come in and play left. So he didn't fully commit, even if he was able to start the transition process. He didn't know what his future was going to be. Well, then once he found out after draft weekend when the team decided not to deal him, he was not cleared yet fully to be able to do what he needed to do to get himself up and running on the right side. And you might ask, what do you mean by that? And his quote to me really stood out, and I'll play it right here after. But he said, it's a little bit harder on the right side coming off of the injury. He dislocated his left kneecap, he said, because I injured my left knee, and most of playing a right tackle is actually pushing off your inside foot. So my left foot is more like bracing and taking on weight with my outside. I'm just focusing on keeping my weight over my inside foot. So that's why it was kind of hard to get too many reps in this off season until my knee was at the point that it could be. So where is he at right now? The Bengals were very strategic in their plan to ease Jonah back into things. Zach Taylor is very good at this. He's very cognizant of keeping players' health in mind. And the plan was to make sure that he didn't have too many days in a row where he's really stressing that knee, because he was really only cleared fully until the end of June. So keep in mind, he didn't have any spring ball. They're really going to be smart about just giving him more and more each day so he can gradually build up. Because the worst thing that could happen is you put too much on his plate and he's not able to succeed in those things, and it causes maybe a setback in his recovery. So to start training camp, the first day, he was starting at right tackle. The next 2 days, it was Jackson Carmen. Carmen and Jonah Williams, Zach Taylor said, would be on a daily rotation and to not read too much into things. But I did think it was interesting that Zach Taylor had given Jonah a rest day in terms of team drills on Friday, so that he had one day on, one day with the twos, a day off, practice with the ones on Saturday, a day off. He's being very smart here. So we will see. Of course, it seems like today when they put pads on, he will be with the ones again. But if you see notes out in the media about Jackson Carmen starting, hold your horses. There's a plan in place here, mostly because of Jonah still recovering from his knee. But things seem to be off to a smooth start. And Frank Pollock was like, I got to give my hat off to Jonah. He has taken this challenge in stride. And when I asked Jonah, do you think there is a silver lining in that maybe you could actually be better at right tackle than you were at left tackle? His response to me tells you everything about how he's approaching it. He said, I'm approaching it that I want to be better at right tackle than I ever was at left. And if that's the case, I'll like right tackle better. He's entering a contract season. So him being at his best is not only good for Jonah and his future in the NFL, but it's also great for the Bengals because you added Orlando Brown to really anchor that left side. If you can get Jonah playing at his best on the right side, you've got a really good outside offensive line there. And of course, the interior might be the Bengals' biggest strength with Ted Karras, Alex Kappa, and Cordell Volson. So if, you know, all of those guys are playing at their best, it's going to make a world of a difference for Joe Burrow in the pocket. And you've seen what he's been able to do with this suspect offensive line at times, with several injuries happening to the offensive linemen. So this is all good stuff. But I thought it was important to bring that up about Jonah, because keep in mind, even if on week one, you know, you don't think he's where he's at, give him some time to really understand this challenge. And it's a lot about his footwork and his technique, and he hasn't been able to really do a lot in practice with it, but the pads comes on and he's really relying on those practices to get him up to speed. I asked him if he was going to play in the preseason, and he said that's really up to the coaches, but he is down to do whatever. And he said, I'm really just going to try and attack these practices against our really good defensive line to get me ready to go. So here's more of my conversation with Jonah and Frank Pollock. That I thought there's some interesting things in there about the state of the offensive line and just where Jonah's been able to get to, that I thought you guys might want to listen in on. And as far as that, here is my conversation.
How do you feel like, I know it's hard to teach about pads, but how do you feel like the position switch is going for you?
I feel like it's going well, you know. There's still some rust I'm knocking off, and I haven't been over on that side in like 7 years. So, you know, I'm giving myself a little bit of grace, but I think the coaches are happy with how I'm playing, and I think I'm getting better each day, getting more comfortable over there.
When you, obviously, they've been really careful about working you back, how have you been able to work on your technique? Like, do it walkthroughs, like when you have kind of a limited what you're able to do right now, like how are you going to make sure that you can get what you need without maybe as much contact, if so much of it is just like your hands trained up?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, since I got cleared at like the very end of June, I've been trying to go out and do something in the right tackle thing every single day, even if it's only for, you know, 20 minutes on a light day or something like that, just to get more comfortable there and just kind of like feel myself on that side and envision myself on that side. And then now as we're doing these practices, obviously that's a lot more intensive, but I just want to get like just a little bit more comfortable every single day. And I feel that if I'm doing that, then I'm going to be in a place that I want to be when the season comes.
Hey, that is it for me for today's episode of the Bengals Beat podcast presented by Free Store Food Bank. I hope you all have gotten a little bit of a chunk of what's been going on here over at Bengals Camp. And as always, we will be back next week with the latest from the Bengals training camp. There's always something going on here, so be sure to keep it here and check out Cincinnati.com. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast episode. We are really trying to do a lot here with this podcast to bring you guys along this season, and we're really appreciative of all of the support. Thanks for tuning in.